My name is J.R. Harmon, and I'm a real alcoholic. Thank you, Ross, for the introduction there. Far too kind. Thank you, Josh, for asking me to come here and speak tonight. You know, I'm a guy that usually likes a topic. I prefer to speak at events such as workshops and such, but I've got plenty to say, so there won't be a lot of time for you won't know the difference probably. But anyway, I don't know exactly what the format is here. I don't think it's a workshop type format, although I will probably throw some of the things that I've learned and some of the things that I've come to believe through my experience. And that's what you'll hear the most this evening is my experience, because that's what carries depth and weight. You know, I do have some experience. I have several years of active alcoholic experience, and I have a few years now of active recovery. I'm proud and happy and blessed to be able to tell all of you tonight that I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body through the use of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the instructions therein, and a loving and gracious God. That has always been in my life, but that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the instructions that are in that book are what actually took me back to that God, gave me the ability to change my life and actually have a life worth living. I'm a blessed man today, and I don't really know of any other way to state that other than that exactly. I'm just truly blessed. I was born into a family. Majority of the family had been fruit tramps for years. They followed the fruit up and down the west coast of California and Oregon, and then they would get done in Oregon, about time to go back down to Southern California and start following the fruit again. And that's just pretty much the kind of family I came from. They definitely used alcohol and some other substances as well, and they worked hard and they drank hard. They partied hard. I know for a fact that they didn't just use alcohol as a society thing or a relaxation thing, but they also used it medicinally, and they gave it to us children at a very young age. I absolutely know that at a very young age, I consumed alcohol. I don't know that that had anything to do with my alcoholism. I don't believe it did, but there was always alcohol available. That's the thing that I want to stress, and I want everyone to understand. It was an acceptable thing, and you didn't have to be very old to be allowed to consume it. I can remember my first actual drunk at 10 years old. I shared a birthday with an uncle, one of my father's older brothers. And I can remember going to a birthday party for both of us. And I remember drinking there. And when I went there, I had full intention at 10 years old of drinking. You know, and drinking a lot. And I did. And what happened that night set the stage for my drinking career. I drank, I threw up, and I passed out. There was a blackout somewhere along the way there, but nonetheless, that's the way I drank, you know, for all my drinking career, that's the way I drank. I thought everybody did. I thought that was the point. You see, if my alcohol consumption is in control, it don't make sense. But drinking to the out of control point was my goal. And I thought that was what it was about. I never drank for relaxation or social events, although most of the social events I attended, there was alcohol being consumed. I got to a point where late in my actual alcohol consumption, I acquired myself 3 DUIs in a 9-month period. And that was not a pleasurable experience, considering at that time I had begun a truck driving career. I almost lost that job at that point, and I was able to salvage the job. It was a real good Teamster job, and I hung on to that job for many more years. But I came to a point where I met a lady that I thought pretty highly of, and she was a lot of fun. And I asked that lady to marry me one night, and she laughed at me. And my first instinct was to smack her, because at that time in my life, if I was having a serious conversation and somebody laughed about it, that was usually the result. You know, I usually just smacked them. You know, and I had several incidents where I found myself in trouble because of my temper. And anyway, I didn't hit her that night. And I asked her, I said, well, why do you say no? You know, we've been hanging out, spent a lot of time together for a long time, and I don't understand, you know, why you laugh. And she says, JR, a person would be a fool to marry you. She said, you're wrecking cars all the time. You're in and out of jail. You're fighting every weekend. You're fighting with somebody. And I said, well, you know, why the hell do you hang out with me? And she said, because you're a lot of fun. You're exciting. I said, well, what would I have to do to get you to marry me? And she said, if you quit drinking for a year, I'll consider marrying you. Well, in my pocket, I had some other mind-altering substances, and in my vehicle, I had some, and in my house, I had some. I thought to myself, well, I can do without the alcohol. I'll just use the other stuff. And I reached up and pushed a drink across the bar, and I told her, you see that drink? And she said, yes. I said, that's my last drink. And she said, we'll see. And it was. My last taste of beverage alcohol was on March 25th, 1981. Many of you, I would judge to say that you weren't even born then. Nonetheless, I continued to have the same behaviors and exhibit the same insanity behind other mind-altering substances for another 13 years. There was really not much difference in my life other than the fact that alcohol was removed. Okay, I had these other things going on. And after 13 years, I'd come to a point where my spiritual malady was killing me. I was even with the other mind-altering substances, I wanted to commit suicide. And I had gotten married. That lady and I ended up getting married in less than a year. And we're still married today. We've been married almost 39 years. I will mention that I'm very grateful for the program of Al-Anon family groups. I know a lot of alcoholics are afraid of Al-Anon, But if you get to know it and spend a little time with it, you'll come to be grateful for it too, because there's nothing to be afraid of. You see, they like us are supposed to work on us, on themselves, not the other person. Nonetheless, we've been married a long time. We have an amazing life today. We 13 years after I had that last drink, I hit a bottom. I guess my bottom, maybe. In 1994, I was random drug tested by my company I was driving truck for, and I shot the meter, or however they measure it, clear off the scale. They couldn't even measure it. I had been smoking marijuana, and my THC level was so high that it was not measurable. And the interesting thing about that is 2 weeks prior to that test, the results of that test coming back, 2 weeks before that, I had received a million-mile safe driving award. And I told him, I said, "My God, this is amazing. You know, 2 weeks ago, you give me a million-mile safe driving award, told me how happy and proud of me you were, and here you are now firing my ass, you know." And I was above the limit every inch of that million miles. But anyway, I thought I might be able to get that job back. I'd seen some other guys get busted, you know, and I went into an insane asylum, turned myself in there to a nut house, a spin dry treatment center. Not a recovery center now. Treatment centers and recovery centers are two different things, so don't get confused. You know, there's a lot of different things going on in AA today. You know, and treatment centers are just that. Well, they want to treat and they will use the word disease, because disease seems to be the common word. They took me in there, and they were giving me treatment for my disease. They weren't giving me a program of recovery, but they did give me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read that book, and I did my time there, and got out of that insane asylum, and I did just what they told me. I went right straight to a meeting, and I hunted me down a sponsor fast, just like they told me, and began to work the steps. You know, everybody told me in the treatment center and out, they told me to do 90-90, you know, got to go to lots of meetings, because meeting makers make it. And I thought they did. You know, I believed them. Everything went good for me. I got through the steps, and I got real active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to all the dances and went to the potlucks and took a big salad. And hell, I played sober baseball and just did it all, man. I sponsored people, and I put on workshops and helped arrange stuff, and I secretaried meetings, and I washed coffee cups, and by God, I just did it all there. I was Mr. AA. And that went pretty good there for about 10 years. And then along about my 11th year, it quit working. It quit working. And I know today that the reason that it quit working was that J.R. Harmon is a real alcoholic. That's why it quit working. You see, I had God pull a fast one on me, and God put some people in my life that taught me some things that I didn't know. And fortunately, I was battered and beaten to the point where I was willing to listen. Now, my learning these things, the more beat up I see people come into AA, you know, if they got to be like dragged in feet first, I think that's cool. because I think it takes a real good ass kicking to bring us around to where we're willing to do what's necessary to actually recover from this illness. Unfortunate thing today is that there's a whole bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that don't have to do all that work. You see, people go to their sister's potluck birthday dinner, and they have a couple of beers, and they head home, and they got a brake light out, and the cop stops them and smells beer and gives them a sobriety test and has them blow, and they're over the limit, and they send their ass to jail and then on to the courthouse, and the judge sends them to AA. Well, just because the guy's had a few beers at his sister's birthday party don't mean that he's an alcoholic. And today we've got a whole bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that can go for a long time and maybe even the rest of their life without a drink. Now, there's no question in my mind that if those people got into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, their life would be better. They would be happier. And the whole planet, the people that live with them and the people around them, would all have a more enjoyable life. But they don't. They don't do the work because they don't have to. I didn't do the work, as it's outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, for almost 12 years because I didn't have to. But I came to a point where I was 45 minutes from putting a gun in my mouth. I was insane. I was restless and irritable and discontented to the point where I couldn't stand the life I was living. You see, I knew what serenity was because for a while I had some and I wanted it back. And when these people came into my life, they changed my life. I was willing to do what they suggested, and they taught me the instructions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the way they're outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, some of the things I wasn't doing was I didn't have a meditation life that amounted to shit, excuse my language, but it didn't amount to anything. You know, I did some praying, but I didn't have a meditation life. Very silly. I couldn't hardly stand to sit for a minute quiet. I had the chatter of 1,000 monkeys. My mind would drive me nuts. And one of the things the man that God put in my life insisted on was a meditation life. And since since he came into my life, my meditation life is one of the most important things about my life. Because it's where I get regenerated. It's where I get my fuel. It's where I meet my God. It's been 14 years ago now, maybe a little bit better than that day that I almost committed suicide. And I have since been blessed with really good spiritual teachers, mentors, spiritual advisors. And they've taught me many, many things. They've taught me some of the things about Alcoholics Anonymous that I feel are very important because they affected me. My experience is that several of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous were very damaging and dangerous for me. And I'll share some of those with you. You won't be happy with all of them because and I have a hard time bringing this up because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but that brings me to another thing about J.R. Harmon. You see, I'd rather save somebody's life than be their friend. I got lots of friends. I got friends all over the world. And I don't give a shit if I get any more. You see, I'd rather tell you the truth and save your life, because if I just sit back and watch somebody die, there'll never be an opportunity for me to be their friend or for them to be my friend. However, if I tell you the truth and it wakes you up, you won't, but you ought to be telling me thanks. But maybe if it wakes you up and saves your life down the road, we can be friends. And that's my feeling. I'm a straightforward kind of guy, and if that don't work for you, by God, it's over there in the lower right hand corner. It says leave. The thing that I want to mention here is that you opened your meeting tonight with one of the biggest lies in Alcoholics Anonymous, the preamble. If you do some searching and find out the history of the preamble, you'll find that it was just written by somebody, probably was a middle of the road solution kind of person, and it came out of the grapevine, which, if you ask me, is a piece of trash because of the junk that's in there. But the first sentence in the preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women. Well, let me tell you, that lie right there has killed who knows how many people. Because you see, I believe that, I heard that at damn near every meeting I went to. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women. And I said, boy, just like at the bar, you know, a fellowship of men and women. Well, I learned after I damn near committed suicide that Alcoholics Anonymous is a book that contains a set of instructions. And if you go to your big book, which J.R. Harman believes is the biggest secret in Alcoholics Anonymous, the book itself. In a fourth edition, it'd be XVII. There's a paragraph number 3 that starts with, it was now time. It says, it was now time the struggling groups thought to place their message and unique experience before the world. This determination bore fruit in the spring of 1939 by the publication of this volume. The membership had then reached about 100 men and women. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, now began to be called Alcoholics Anonymous from the title of its book. So Alcoholics Anonymous, the book, was Alcoholics Anonymous before the fellowship. Before the men and women were Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll read it again. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, now began to be called Alcoholics Anonymous from the title of its own book. Okay? I'm not Einstein. I didn't ever go to college. I cheated to get a high school diploma. But I asked my first, and I'll use the word, you won't hear it very many times out of J.R. Harman, but I'll use the word now, my first sponsor. And I'll tell you in a minute, I think I'll tell you in a minute why I don't like to say that word. But I asked my first sponsor, I said, if Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody tells me that Alcoholics Anonymous is going to change my life, give me a life beyond my wildest dreams. But down there on the bottom of how it works, it says that no human power really will relieve my alcoholism. I said, men and women, those are humans. You know, human power is going to relieve my alcoholism. You know, he said, JR, that ain't right. I said, okay, you know, I understand there's a program. Well, a lot of people don't realize there's two different things going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's important that people realize that. There's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, JR Harman, for 11 and a half years approximately, was very deep. Man, I was up over my eyeballs in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was only up to my shins in the program. And that's when I found out that I'm a real alcoholic. I damn near committed suicide because I wasn't working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as it's outlined in the Big Book. You see, I hear people all the time in the fellowship saying that they are working their problem, or that no, they're working their program, excuse me. I'm working my program. And they'll say, I'm working my steps. And you know what? 8 out of 10 of them people are in and out, in and out, in and out. And I look at them and I go, you know, why don't you try working the program? Why don't you try the steps instead of your steps, your program? When I was working my program, I almost put a gun in my mouth. So I think it's important that we get back to the program. But first, we have to know what the program is. You see, I was involved with starting a Big Book study group, and we studied the book consistently for quite a while. And it got to the point where nobody was coming. We would put on a workshop that was a Fellowship of the Spirit event. I don't know if you're any of you familiar with that. But the Fellowship of the Spirit, the format of those events is different than most of your conferences or your conventions. In a Fellowship of the Spirit conference, you got people there who are interested in working the program, and that's the format at those events. People come there and they share about their experience working with the program. And what we found is that people aren't interested in working the program. People are interested in a social event. I see them flock to these events where the comedians come and talk. You know, the guys that are funny. And I hear people say, oh, you want to go see this guy? He's really funny. Well, if I want to see comedy, there's a good comedy club downtown. I'll go down there and see some good comedy. You know, I don't come to AA for comedy. I come here to save my life. And I don't even come to save my life anymore. Because I know what it takes to save my life. It takes the instructions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't have to go to a damn meeting for that. You see, the program's not worked in meetings. The program's worked in your life. And if your life is meetings, then you're probably living on meeting-based sobriety. And I know that here lately with this lockdown thing that's been going on, there's a bunch of people out there going back out. I know there is in my area, and I'm doing these Skype meetings. I've done these Skype meetings in Russia and London and Ireland, and I've done them in Switzerland, and I've done them all over the United States since this lockdown thing has started. I've been to more damn meetings since this lockdown deal than I've probably been to in the last 10 years because I'm not a big meeting guy. When I go to a meeting, I'm going there hunting newcomers. I'm not going there to get something. I'm going there to take something. And I think that's what we need to get back to. But do you have anything to take? That's the question. You know, I run onto these guys constantly that say, JR, how do you sponsor so many people? And I look at them, they got far more time than me, you know, and they're sponsoring one guy. And in their whole 35 years, they've sponsored 4 or 5 guys. And I look at him and I go, you know what? If you just sponsor a few more, I wouldn't have to sponsor so damn many. You know, these guys are I don't know what they're doing. They're still selfish and self-centered. They won't give of their time. Or they got nothing to give in the first place. You know, I hear it all the time. I'm just not a good sponsor. Well, by God, how do you get good at something? It tells us on page 84 how to get good at Alcoholics Anonymous. It says right here on page 84 where it starts talking about step 10. It says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and can you continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. That's steps 4 through 9 if you don't realize it. And we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Whoa, now that's a big deal. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. How do you do that? By continuing to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And you share that with other people. It goes on to say, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. That's where I was fouling up. See, I went through the steps one time real thoroughly. And then here's another mistake I made. I listened to old fucking one-eyed Jack. Oh, there I go cussing again. Yeah, please excuse me. I get a little passionate sometimes. But nonetheless, old one-eyed Jack back there in the back corner of the room, he had like 40 years, so he must have known what he was talking about, for Christ's sake. And I listened to him close, you know, when I was young in the program. And I heard him say, yeah, well, this is what happened. It was October. Okay, so in October, that's the 10th month. What do we talk about? Well, step 10, for Christ's sake. So here it is in October, step 10, and old one-eyed Jack gets to talk because he's got lots of time. And I'm listening intently like the rest of the newcomers, you know, anybody with less time than him, and he had 40 years or so. But anyway, he says, you know, my step 10, he says, I go to bed at night and I lay down on my head on the pillow and I do me a mental review of my day. And he says, if I come out of that review and I feel like I've done anybody wrong or I owe anybody an apology, I just make apology to them the next day or as soon as I can, he says, and I say a little prayer, tell God thanks for another day being sober. And, my life's good. Well, I just read to you what this book says about step 10. The fellow that saved my life, the guy that came into my life through trickery by God, whatever God is, that guy told me, he says, JR, for you to do a mental review would be like jumping a dead battery with a dead battery, which was so true. You know, you can't fix something that's broke with something that's broke. And that's what I was trying to do. That's what old one-eyed Jack had been doing for 40 years. It worked for old one-eyed Jack. You know why? Because one-eyed Jack wasn't a real alcoholic. Simple as that. There's no problem. You know, we've made AA open and roomy. And this is another thing. You know, the short form of the third tradition, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Well, by that, I no longer qualify because my problem is not drinking. I've grown past that. I know what my problem is now. My problem is a spiritual malady that leads me to drink or use other mind-altering substances. It's a spiritual malady that drives me crazy and makes me do insane things. It's not, the problem's not alcohol. I got a shitload of it here at the house. I got some friends that come by once in a while, like a shot of nice, good, smooth tequila. Now, I don't know what it tastes like because I ain't had, when I drank tequila, I drank that old $10 junk. You know, I drank a hell of a lot of that, but I didn't drink this good tequila. But my point is that the spiritual malady is my problem, not my drinking. If I let my spiritual malady get out of line, I'm going to drink or commit suicide. You know, in that 6 or 8 months there where I almost committed suicide, I never once considered using a mind-altering substance. It's the damnedest thing. It still kind of puzzles me. You know, I never considered anything to relieve my spiritual malady other than just killing myself. And I damn near did that. I had the blanket laid out and the pistol and everything right next to my favorite chair. And I'll tell you what happened. Since Ross is here, I'll tell you what happened, how that happened. Ross, I hadn't known him very long at that time, and he gave me a stack of CDs. And I listened. I was a truck driver. I was on the road a lot. I listened to a lot of CDs. Up here behind me, up here in the cupboard behind me, you can see along that top shelf, there's about 3,200 CDs up there. And I got more than that on the computer. Okay, but Ross gave me this stack of CDs, and I listened to all of those CDs except one. And the one that I didn't listen to was number 3 out of a 10 CD set. I couldn't wrap my head around listening to that one. If I'd have had all 10 of them, I would have listened to all 10. Or if I'd have had number 1 or number 10, I would have listened to it. But I had number 3 out of the middle. Well, that day that I was going to commit suicide or turn myself into the Puff unit, I decided I was going to listen to the only CD that I owned that I had never listened to before. And I put that CD in the player, and in the first 15 minutes, the man told me 2 things. There were two guys on this CD, but only one of them was talking. And he told me 2 things. He told me what was wrong with me and what I needed to do to fix me. And I pulled to the shoulder of the road, and the first person I called was Ross. And I said, I need those other 9 CDs. I said, who is this guy? And he says, hell, I don't know. I didn't listen to it either. So I said, I'll see you tomorrow. You have them CDs for me. He says, I'll get them, JR. I'll have them for you tomorrow. So the next day I went by there and picked them up. But as soon as while I had Ross on the phone, I said, who is this guy? Do you know him? He says, no, I don't know him, but I know a guy that does. Just turned out that I had met the fellow that Ross was talking about, and I had his phone number. So I called the guy that Ross told me knew who this other gentleman was. And I said, I'm in a bad way. I need this guy's phone. I need to talk to this guy. And he says, here's his phone number. And I called that phone number, and the best I can figure, it was 8 minutes from the time I pulled to the shoulder of the road till the time this man picked up the phone. He's passed away now, and I'm going to tell you his name. Some of you may know it. Others of you, it may mean nothing. His name was Mark Houston. And that man changed my life forever. I told him what was going on. He gave me a couple of real quick little exercises right there on the side of the road, and that's when he told me that for me to do a mental inventory was like jumping a dead battery with a dead battery. And I asked him if he'd help me, and he said yes. And things have not changed. When he passed away, I started, I spent about 3 months searching for another sponsor. I interviewed people in my area and couldn't, I don't know if any of you have ever had the opportunity to interview sponsors. It's rather comical. But in the meditation practice that I had learned from Mark, I would set in meditation about a sponsor, and the name Dave F. kept coming to me. Dave F., Dave F. Well, Dave was the other voice on that CD. But I was afraid of Dave. I was terrified of him because he's a very educated man. It's obvious when he talks that he's a real cerebral guy, you know, and I'm not. And he scared me. But I finally came to a point where, and this is a piece of God's work too. My wife mentioned that she's very spiritually connected, and she listens to CDs from time to time. And she knew I was interviewing sponsors, and I'm coming home from work, and she's telling me, she told me one night, she says, you know, I've been listening to this CD. She says, I don't know where I got it. But she said, I've been listening to this CD on my way back and forth to work, and you might consider listening to this CD. This guy might make a good sponsor for you. And I said, really? And I said, who is it? And she says, well, like I said, I don't know where this CD come from, but it's some guy named Dave F. So I said, well, okay, you know, I couldn't hardly deny it then. And I called him up. I talked to him 3 days in a row on the phone. And at the end of that 3 days, I ended up asking him if he'd work with me. And he's been my spiritual advisor since. Now, I want to touch on that word sponsor that I used earlier. And it's the same as the word disease. In my vocabulary, I don't like to use the word disease when I'm talking about Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism, nor do I like to use the word sponsor when I'm talking about Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism. The reason I don't like to use those two words when I'm talking about Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism is because you won't find them in this little jewel. And I mentioned, I told you earlier about in the second, forward to the second edition, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. This, the book, is Alcoholics Anonymous. The book doesn't say anything about a disease. It talks about an illness. The book doesn't talk about a sponsor. It talks about a spiritual advisor or friend. And the man that changed my life, Mark Houston, would not very easily tolerate the use of the word sponsor or the use of the word disease when talking about Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism, because it's not in the book. He said, JR, if you're gonna live by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to live Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're living Alcoholics Anonymous, you're not going to use those two words when you're talking about alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous. And I try not to. That man changed my life. He gave me a life worth living. I'm blessed to have had him in my life. And I'm blessed to have the people in my life that are in my life today. You know, let me give you a little picture of what's going on in my life today. I'm finding myself, I think it has something to do with not having to buy plane tickets, but I've been sponsoring more people too, but I'm doing more of these talks in faraway places than I've ever done before. See, it would have been a hell of a lot more expensive for the Grace Group to get me out to talk to you if you had to buy me a plane ticket and a hotel room and I eat good. You know, there's some, when you have me come, there's some cost there. You know, so I'm doing a lot of these now more than ever before. Some of the other things that have changed in my life are, for example, my wife and my daughter are both essential workers. So they've been working all through this shutdown thing, and my grandkids have been out of school. And I'm retired. I retired about a year and a half ago. And God has put me in a place. And apparently I'm fit to be of use to God and my fellows, because he's had me taking care of my grandchildren. Now there's been some challenges with that, but overall it's been a real blessing and a gift. I will tell you though that JR's no school teacher. You know, I'm not really too technically inclined when it comes to the computer, and doing school work with my grandkids has been a bit of a challenge. However, school's out now, it's summertime, so we've been real busy doing that. You know, I got lots of gifts, many gifts, gifts like these, having the opportunity to share with you people. This is an amazing gift for me. along this same line, I've had the opportunity to do some traveling. There have been some people who have been able to feed me, if you will, and do some of the other things. I had the opportunity to go to Russia twice for Fellowship of the Spirit conferences. I went there in 2013 for the Fellowship of the Spirit Moscow number one. And then they invited me back. That first time I was there 8 days. And the second time, I had mentioned there while I was there the first time in 2013 that I had gone into Folsom Prison with meetings for several years. And they had me back in 2014, and I had the opportunity to be there for 8 days, and we traveled across Siberia, almost completely across Siberia. And if you know anything about Russia or you've heard anything about it, you've probably heard that they have the gulags or the prisons out in Siberia, and they do. And that was part of the trip. The second trip was to go and introduce Alcoholics Anonymous, H&I, work in prisons to the people in Russia and in Siberia. And what a gift that was. Have an opportunity to go across there. There's some areas there that are very strong Buddhist communities. And I spoke in several Buddhist stupas and temples and saw some amazing things and got to ride the Trans-Siberian Railway and meet lots of neat people. So these are gifts that came to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. I never, you know, there's lots of places that JR would still like to go. There always has been some bucket list locations, if you may, but Russia was never on one of them. You know, and that's where God wanted me to go. You know, it was like the trip to Nineveh. You know, this is where we're asking you to go. And you know, oftentimes I'm in fear of things like that. You know, I didn't know if I wanted to go do that because I'd never done anything quite like that. And what I know today, and if you don't get anything out of what I've said this evening, listen closely to this. I know today that God does not call on the prepared. God prepares those that are called on. And I think we're about done. Is that correct, Josh? 6 o'clock? So I'll say with that, God bless you all and thank you for allowing me to share.